If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Cook County's all-time snow record happened 46 years ago this week. Let's get more on that. This Week in Chicago History Now with Anna DeBlantis. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Bob. Might make us feel a little better because this week, 1979 in Chicago, there were 29 inches of snow on the ground, and the city was essentially shut down after the blizzard of 79. Streets impassable, the CTA barely moving, buses, cars, train tracks were snowed in. It was a mess. Even O'Hare shut down for three straight days. And the city was at a standstill at that time. A lot of things weren't working, and people believed that the city really wasn't handling it well with the preparation or the reaction. If you think about way back then, the sentiment of people across the city, there was a lot of finger-pointing about what Mayor Bolandic and his team should have done better. Didn't matter that the storm was a complete and total surprise. I even went back and looked at the Channel 5 news from the day before, and at noontime they said, well, we got a light dusting heading our way. And it's like, yeah. It was a light dusting. It was major. But nonetheless, one bungling response after another led to a lot of questions, and we pulled a clip here. CBS 2, Bill Curtis, Walter Jacobson. This was a full 5 days, keep this in mind, perspective here, after the blizzard hit, and the city was still paralyzed.
The following is a special report from the Channel 2 newsroom.
5 days ago, the city of Chicago and its environs were hit with one of nature's little surprises, a major snowstorm. A devastating blizzard of winter that virtually strangled the city and left its citizens struggling to cope in over 20 inches of snow. Only once before in the city's modern history had such an accumulation blasted the area. That was 1967. Now as then, and try as hard as it could, the city could barely keep its lifelines open. Side streets still unpassable. Public transportation snarled, expressways buried, O'Hare Airport closed for one of the few times in its history. This is turning out to be Chicago's winter of discontent, all right. With so much snow on streets and expressways, we're wondering where to put it as we struggle to cope.
Yes, January 13 and 14, 1979, mm-hmm. And that was the turning point. That was the point where weather became a political matter in Chicago, right?
No question, Bob. From that point forward, there wasn't a mayor alive who took over the city of Chicago, or really any snowy city, and didn't take snow removal seriously. And it's a famous political case study, still studied in political science classes today, because it cost Mayor Bolandic his job and allowed Jane Byrne out of nowhere to come in and beat the machine. So lots happening at that time in our city's history, both weather-wise and politically.
There was one thing that Mayor Bolandic did right, wasn't there?
Okay, so one thing, I did find one thing, because he wasn't super popular toward the end there with everything that happened, but there, this week in 1979, he made a move to protect citizens, Bob, who shoveled other people's snow. So the city's still digging out from the blizzard, and people were questioning their aldermen, calling into these radio shows and saying, I'm afraid to help my elderly neighbor shovel their snow because I could get sued. And the way the city ordinances were written, that was happening, or there was at least the fear of that happening, because it was a pretty strict law. And so Bolandic just decided that, hey, we're going to change that, and we're going to make it so with this crisis situation and moving forward, people don't feel like bad about trying to or afraid of trying to help their neighbors in a crisis. So here's a clip of Bolandic explaining he was going to take action on that.
The law department of the city of Chicago and all of the resources of the city of Chicago will stand behind the act of any good Samaritan who clears in front of their house or helps some elderly person or handicapped person or anyone else.
You're referring, of course, to the quirk in Illinois law, which provides that if you shovel...
The alleged quirk, yes. Okay. Unfortunately, it got publicized beyond its real proportion. We're going to take care of that with an ordinance next Friday. But between now and next Friday, I want to assure anyone who goes out and is a good Samaritan that the law department of the city of Chicago will protect and defend them, and the resources of the city of Chicago will be pledged behind their good deeds to make sure that no harm befalls that citizen, and in a proper occasion, that an appropriate award go to those who act over and beyond the usual call of duty.
Nice, but it wasn't enough to get him reelected, was it?
No. He was liked for like a minute, and that was it. Okay, thanks, Mayor Blandick. Now, what are you going to do about the rest of the snow?
Yeah, right. Harry Carey was on the South Side in January of 1978, and there was a controversy going on, wasn't there?
You know, very public controversy. We, of course, associate Harry Carey most with the North Side, but we all know for 11 years he was a broadcaster on the South Side, and there's a very public salary dispute at this time. This week, 1978, in fact, Harry had been telling the Sox, hey, pony up some more money or else I'm taking a hike. I'm leaving. And this week, Harry told the Sox he would be staying in the broadcast booth, which he did for another four seasons. And it played out in the papers. It was very public. He told the Chicago Tribune, let's face it, until last season, the Sox were a depressed product. They were in deep financial problems, and I needed a raise, but I didn't ask for it. Now I am, and I want to make at least as much as Jack Brickhouse, who's making $150,000. Why should I make less? So this was all playing out, Bob, and it's interesting to think about it, but he did get his raise this week and signed his contract for four more seasons, and that was it. We pulled some footage here. Harry Carey, around that time, broadcasting at Comiskey Park, over on the South Side.
Hello again, everybody. Harry Carey and Jimmy Pearsall from Comiskey Park, where we're going to have a wild night tonight. Hey, I want them to see the shirt you're wearing. Can you make that out? It says outpatients.
I think everybody should.
Now hold up your legs. He's wearing shorts. Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
I never walked up to the plate thinking home run. Making what? Contact was my motto.
Well, you only finished 635 behind Babe Ruth.
Yeah, the tradition of singing in the seventh inning with Harry started with the White Sox. I love hearing Harry and Jimmy again.
Don't
That's
you?
Great.
Don't you? It probably didn't matter what you were ever watching, if the product was depressed or whatever he called it, because you were listening to Harry, and just love him. But yeah, the seventh inning stretch, right, he started it over there because owner Bill Veeck, heard him singing and thought it was terrible, and so he said, let's mic him up so that all the fans feel really comfortable singing, because Harry's not good and they're not going to feel intimidated. So that's how the seventh inning stretch started, with Harry Carey singing loudly and everybody following, and that, of course, became his trademark on the North Side, as we well know, Bob.
Yeah, it's the king of polka. Tell us about Chicago history and polka, or have we changed our format to polka music?
I confused a few people there, Bob, but no, still WGN radio, but that was the king of Chicago polka, Walter Lil Wally Jagiello, back in the day. Just loved by Chicago, his signature polka style. People could dance to it, and they just loved him. This week, 1959, Bob, he wrote the White Sox fight song, Let's Go, 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 White Sox. Just an incredible story if you think about it. A polka guy did it. The son of Polish immigrants, he started performing at 8. He was a band leader by the age of 14. He took his parents' polka style from the old country, and he made it faster and increased the beat, and people loved it because they could dance to it, and it was uplifting and fun. And he actually got signed by Columbia Records at one point before starting his own label. But his White Sox fight song just enjoyed so much popularity after he recorded it during the Sox run. It was a World Series run. They won the pennant in 59, and their nickname was Go Go Sox. It's solidified. Cubs fans or Sox fans, you can listen to the, we pulled it right here, the White Sox fight song, courtesy of Lil Wally Jagiello.
We're gonna run. Oh, yeah, I can see Louis Aparicio stealing a base now. The Polka King.
I don't know how many other professional sports teams have a fight song.
It's pretty good.
By a polka guy.
This week in Chicago history, back in 1993, a term was born that we still use today in all these stock market and money reports, don't we?
Yeah, on WGN Radio, CNBC, or really any, Bob, of the financial news networks, they use the VIX. You'll hear a mention of it, particularly in volatile times when market trading is volatile for whatever reason. It's also known as the Fear Index, and it is a gauge of market volatility created right here in Chicago and launched by the CBOE, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, held a news conference this week, 1993, to announce they were launching real-time reporting of the VIX, so it would move just like real-time reporting of any individual stock that you could find. You could see where the public sentiment really was about the markets, and it was a new tool. I mean, think about it. I mean, we always look at money in terms of being a quant thing, like you it's about numbers, but this was really measuring sentiment in a way that is very meaningful, and it tracks S&P forward-looking options. It's a very complicated formula developed over the years by very bright people, professors and economists over the years, but it became just this effective way for traders to kind of see where things were. In normal times, you don't hear about it so much, but the VIX soared to new heights in 2008, of course, during the housing crisis and the bank collapse. We heard a lot about it then. That was the highest at that point. Then COVID sent it even higher. March 16th, 2020, to this day, the highest level ever reached by the VIX. And that, of course, when the whole world was shutting down, businesses, cities, entire economies were shutting down, and the VIX soared.
And finally, if you remember Webolts, you may remember S&H Green Stamps. And there was a very unpopular announcement made this week in 1976, wasn't there?
Bob, did anybody in your family ever collect the S&H Green Stamps?
My mom had books of them. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
remember,
stuffed in kitchen drawers.
But you couldn't touch them, I bet, because you had to wait until you got enough of them to be able to turn them in for something valuable. Back in the 60s and 70s, these were super popular. It was one of the first store loyalty programs, if you think about it, because every dollar you spent, you got one of these green stamps, and later you could check them in. If you got enough books filled, you could get really cool stuff, like housewares and tea sets and maybe something big like a vacuum cleaner or something like that if you saved up enough of them. But this week, 1976, Webolts, a very popular department store in the Chicagoland area at the time, made the unpopular decision, no more, we're not going to be issuing any more green stamps. They've been doing it since 57, and they were the primary redemption site for S&H stamps as well. So it was a huge thing in Chicago, like, what's happening to my green stamps? But it was kind of over. It had kind of run its course. Here's a TV ad. We pulled a local TV ad around that time explaining all the wonderful things you could look forward to purchasing with your S&H green stamps.
I'm getting a lot of great ideas.
That's why S&H calls it the idea book.
When do you see what I'm getting, Jack?
You mean I can get all these things with S&H green stamps? Housewares, clocks, radios, board stuff, linens. They really do have everything.
Well, what do you think? A Cuisinart for Jack? He's a great chef.
Here's to S&H green stamps.
And here's to the stores that give them.
S&H green stamps. Say make your money do more.
I imagine somebody just turning on the radio now hearing that being very confused, Anna.
It's like, that takes you way back, Bob, to be able to think about something like that. But it's a pretty cool thing at the time, I'm sure. But it just had run its course, and Webolts was like, you know what? We're done. We're done.
You have to go to your standard gas station now to get them. Anna DeVlantis, This Week in Chicago History. More next Wednesday. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Bob.